Imagine, you're a 32-year-old software developer living in Istanbul, and you've been job hunting for, gosh, 6 grueling months.
Yeah, that is a tough spot to be in.
Right. The market is tough, your savings are just kind of dwindling, and the daily grind of sending out resumes is starting to break your spirit. And then a message pops up on your LinkedIn.
Out of nowhere.
Exactly. It's a recruiter from a Web3 startup called CryptoFlow Labs. And they are offering you a fully remote senior engineering position, the salary, $145,000 a year.
I mean, that's the kind of message that makes you just let your guard down entirely, you know? It is the exact lifeline you've been hoping for after half a year of rejection emails.
Yeah, so you jump on it. I mean, who wouldn't? You ace the initial video interview, you completely crush the technical coding test they send over the next day, and you finally let yourself celebrate. You tell your family, you breathe this huge sigh of relief. But then, yeah. Within 48 hours, the celebration abruptly stops. $62,000 in cryptocurrency, basically your entire life savings, is silently drained from your Ethereum wallet.
Wow.
18 of your saved passwords are stolen. And to make matters infinitely worse, hackers now have administrative access to your previous company's AWS account. It's a ticking time bomb you didn't even know you were carrying.
And the craziest part is, you didn't click a shady email link. You didn't, download a pirated movie or visit a compromised website. You literally just applied for a job.
Right.
And the terrifying reality of our current digital landscape is that this isn't an isolated scam cooked up by a few random fraudsters. This is a massive, highly sophisticated social engineering operation. And it's orchestrated by North Korea's state-sponsored hacking collective, the Lazarus Group.
It's wild. So we are dedicating today's deep dive to unpacking this exact threat, which is a campaign known as the Contagious Interview. We're going to deconstruct how these nation-state hackers are, weaponizing the everyday tools we rely on as developers. We'll look at why they are specifically hunting independent coders instead of institutional targets, and crucially, how you can spot the invisible tripwires before you step on them in your next job hunt.
Yeah, because they're definitely out there.
Okay, let's unpack this because this isn't a smash and grab robbery, right? It's the corporate equivalent of a Trojan horse.
Yeah.
The attack vector doesn't start with a malicious payload or a zero-day exploit. It starts with psychological manipulation.
Yeah, and professional validation. The manipulation is so deeply baked into the strategy that the hackers actually rely on the victims to advertise themselves.
Wait, how do you mean?
Well, the attackers are hunting for developers working in Web3, DeFi, React, Node.js, all those high-value areas. But their primary filter is literally looking for people who have the Open to Work banner active on their LinkedIn profile.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. In fact, 71% of the victims in the Contagious Interview campaign had that banner turned on. It acts as a beacon for the attackers,
Yeah.
signaling someone who is, highly motivated, maybe financially stressed, and willing to jump through hoops to secure a role.
That is just incredibly predatory. I mean, they are actively exploiting the inherent vulnerability of the job market. But I have to push back a bit here.
Sure.
If the red flags are there, like, say, a recruiter using a generic Gmail address instead of a corporate domain, or, refusing to turn on their camera during the interview, why do smart, tech-savvy people keep falling for it? We are talking about senior engineers who understand cybersecurity fundamentals.
That's a fair question, but the setup is remarkably thorough, and it preys on hope over logic. The attackers create LinkedIn accounts that look entirely legitimate at first glance.
Right.
They use AI-generated profile pictures. Now, if you look very closely, these sometimes betray themselves with unnatural lighting in the eyes or skin that is just a bit too aggressively smooth.
Like that weird plastic look.
Exactly. But the accounts boast over 500 connections, even if they were created less than 6 months ago. They actively post industry-relevant content. They comment on popular GitHub repos, share tech articles. The veneer of credibility is meticulously maintained.
So the digital footprint looks robust enough to pass a casual background check.
Yeah, exactly. And when you finally get on that Zoom or Discord call, the recruiter almost always keeps their camera off. 85% of victims never saw a face.
85%.
Yeah. And they cite a broken webcam, or they complain about being exhausted from back-to-back meetings, which is something any remote worker can totally sympathize with.
Right. We've all been there.
But the real key to the illusion is the dialogue itself. They ask highly legitimate, complex technical questions about smart contract vulnerabilities or Node.js event loops. It builds immediate trust. You sit there and think, okay, this person really knows their stack. This is a serious technical interview.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Because once that psychological trust is established and the developer is eager to prove their worth, the attackers pivot to the technical payload. They assign a coding test.
Yep, and that is the exact moment the trap snaps shut.
Because the coding test looks completely normal for a modern dev interview, right?
Yeah, totally normal.
Yeah.
They might invite you to a private GitHub repository or ask you to implement a feature using a specific NPM package, but that package is actually typo-squatted.
Oh, like a fake name.
Right. For example, asking you to install React Charting Library instead of the legitimate, widely used React Chart JS2.
Mm-hmm.
Or, and this is the most insidious method, they send you a ZIP file containing some raw UX designs for you to implement in React.
And buried in those UX designs are SVG files, which is brilliant because of the fundamental architectural difference between an SVG and standard image formats. I mean, JPEGs and PNGs, they just store image data as flat pixels. But SVGs are actually XML text files. They contain mathematical instructions for drawing shapes. And because they are native text files rendered by browsers, they natively support embedding HTML script tags right alongside the visual data.
Yeah, SVG steganography is the technical term for this. The attacker sent an SVG file that looks totally innocent. In one heavily documented case from the source material, it was a file called flagyes.svg.
Just a flag icon.
Exactly. Purportedly meant to be used for the project's internationalization features. If you preview it, it displays a flawless vector image of the American flag. But hidden deep inside the XML code, heavily obfuscated so it looks like absolute gibberish to the naked eye, is a massive block of malicious JavaScript.
It's like receiving a script for a play, but buried deep in the stage directions is a command telling the lead actor to rob the audience.
That is a great way to put it.
Right. And the theater security, which in this case is your enterprise antivirus software, doesn't catch it because they only check the spoken dialogue. They don't analyze the stage directions for malicious intent. And because you are a developer taking a coding test, you don't double-click it to open it in a basic image viewer. You open the project folder in VS Code and you fire up a live server to preview your components in real time.
And when you do that, the JavaScript embedded inside the SVG executes in the background. Standard Windows Defender or enterprise-grade antivirus just doesn't flag it because the system simply sees you rendering a standard image file within a trusted development environment.
Wow.
Yeah, the payload bypasses traditional endpoint security entirely. The environment trusts the developer and the developer trusts the file.
So the bomb goes off silently. You're looking at a digital picture of a flag, writing your React components, thinking you're absolutely nailing this interview. You have literally no idea that your machine has just been compromised.
None at all.
Which brings us to the malware itself, known as OtterCookie. I want to walk through how this thing operates because it's a terrifying masterclass in multi-stage execution. So stage one is the dropper, right? It's a tiny, heavily obfuscated script whose only job is to reach out to legitimate-looking JSON storage sites and download the real malware.
Yeah, and the OtterCookie dropper is incredibly paranoid. Before it downloads the main payload, it intensely scrutinizes the environment it has landed in. It checks the system parameters. Does the computer have less than 4 gigabytes of RAM? Does it have a MAC address associated with common analysis tools like VMware or VirtualBox?
It's checking if it's being watched.
Exactly. If it detects even a hint that it's operating inside a security researcher's sandbox, it quietly terminates itself. It leaves absolutely no trace.
So if this malware is so smart that it can detect if it's being tested in a virtual machine, how do security researchers even study it?
It's extremely difficult. Security researchers actually have to build highly customized physical decoy machines that perfectly mimic messy real-world developer environments just to trick the malware into executing so they can study it.
That level of evasion is just wild.
Yeah.
Okay, so assuming it decides the coast is clear and it's running on a real victim's machine, it moves to stage two, which is the credential stealer.
Yes.
This is where it targets the SockLite databases hidden deep inside browsers like Chrome, Edge, and Brave. It extracts your encrypted passwords, but more importantly, it goes after your session cookies. And session cookies are the absolute keys to the kingdom.
Oh, totally. If attackers have your active session cookie, they don't need your password.
Mm-hmm.
They don't even need your two-factor authentication code. They can bypass all of it and just walk right into your Gmail or your corporate GitHub account as if they're sitting at your desk.
Terrifying.
And then stage three. While it's quietly exfiltrating those cookies, stage three activates the wallet stealer. This is where the immediate financial damage happens. It specifically hunts the local app data for cryptocurrency wallets, you know, MetaMask, Phantom, Ledger Live. It steals the encrypted vaults.
Right.
But it also deploys a background process known as clipboard hijacking. The malware sits in your system's memory, just monitoring everything you copy. If it detects a string of text that matches the rejects pattern of a cryptocurrency address, it intercepts your clipboard and swaps your intended destination address with the hacker's wallet address.
So you go to pay a vendor or move funds to cold storage, you hit paste, you don't notice that the long string of alphanumeric characters changed slightly in the middle, and you send your money directly to North Korea.
Yep, it's gone instantly.
Uh-huh.
And finally, stage four locks the attacker's grip on the system. This is the Remote Access Trojan, or RAT. This establishes a persistent live connection back to the attacker's command and control servers, allowing them to quietly explore your file system. Yeah, they exfiltrate highly sensitive files, your corporate AWS credentials, your local .env files containing production database passwords, your SSH keys.
Stealing AWS keys and crypto wallets with this level of multi-stage evasion, the dropper paranoia, the clipboard hijacking... I mean, this isn't a couple of script kiddies running automated tools in a basement. This takes serious, coordinated research and development.
It takes a military budget, specifically North Korea's military budget. We really have to look at the macroeconomics driving this operation. North Korea is under some of the most severe, comprehensive global sanctions in modern history.
Right, they are cut off.
Completely. Their access to the legitimate global financial system is entirely cut off. To put their desperation into perspective, their entire national GDP is roughly $28 billion for a population of 26 million people. By comparison, South Korea's GDP is $1.8 trillion.
So they're completely starved for foreign currency to fund their government.
Exactly. The Lazarus Group is their elite cyber arm, operating since at least 2009. And they're officially tasked with generating that missing currency. From 2017 to 2026, blockchain analysts estimate they have stolen over $3 billion in cryptocurrency.
$3 billion, wow.
And according to the UN panel of experts, this stolen digital wealth doesn't go to public infrastructure. It is directly funneled into funding North Korea's ballistic missile and nuclear weapons programs.
So what does this all mean? It means your personal side hustle in Web3 or your desperate attempt to find a remote tech job to pay your rent could literally be funding a nation state's nuclear weapons program.
Yeah, it's sobering.
That is a terrifying escalation from a standard phishing scam where someone just wants to, you know, max out your credit card or steal your Netflix password. But it makes me wonder, Lazarus used to hack banks, right? That pulled off the famous Bangladesh bank heist. Why pivot to targeting individual freelance developers?
Because developers are the ultimate skeleton keys in the modern digital economy. A single developer often holds personal crypto wealth, which is an immediate untraceable payout for the hackers.
Right.
But more importantly, that developer has privileged access. They have the SSH keys to corporate production servers. They have API keys for third-party services. They have administrative access to corporate AWS accounts. Hacking one mid-level developer quietly opens the back door to an entire company's infrastructure without ever having to attack the company's firewall directly.
Which brings us to the immense corporate fallout documented in our sources. Because it's not just the individual who suffers the financial and emotional toll here. These developers essentially become patient zero for massive corporate data breaches. Let's look at the DataStax breach from February of 2026. This wasn't just a compromised employee, this was a poisoned open source well. Attackers actually submitted a malicious pull request to an official repository.
Yeah, and the attack on DataStax was brilliant in its subtlety. A busy maintainer was reviewing a pull request that purportedly fixed a minor legitimate bug in the code.
Right, just a standard PR.
Exactly. And the maintainer, likely rushing or trusting the seemingly helpful contributor, merged the PR. But what they missed was a deeply hidden modification to the tasks.json file. For 18 days, the OtterCookie malware sat live in that official repository. At least 120 external developers cloned it, unknowingly infecting their own machines, which ultimately led to a limited but highly damaging data breach for one of DataStax's enterprise clients.
Unbelievable. And the second case study brings us right back to our opening scenario in Istanbul, because the fallout for the company the developer eventually joined was catastrophic.
It was devastating. The startup in Istanbul hired a front-end developer who had previously been a victim of the contagious interview campaign 6 months prior.
But he didn't know.
The developer didn't even know his laptop was infected. The malware had just been sitting dormant waiting for a high-value connection. He brought that compromised personal machine to his new job to to do some weekend work.
And
yeah, the hackers woke up. They used his newly acquired session cookies to bypass the startup's VPN and downloaded their entire AWS database. That included 4,800 user wallets containing millions in client funds.
Oh my gosh.
The startup had to freeze all operations, rebuild their entire cloud infrastructure from scratch, and undergo massive third-party security audits. The incident response alone cost them $250,000.
And the scary part is that the malware isn't static. It's actively evolving to exploit the very tools we are building to make our lives easier. Like, as of December 2025, our sources detail a new variant of this malware called Stoatwaffle.
Yes, Stoatwaffle.
Instead of relying on the developer to open an SVG file, Stoatwaffle completely abuses VS Code's native tasks.json file to auto-run its payload the literal millisecond you open a project folder. And its primary target has shifted. It specifically hunts for the API keys of AI coding assistants like Cursor and Claude.
Because the attackers are highly observant, you know. They know what tools developers rely on daily. They know we want extreme automation, we want live servers, and we heavily rely on AI to help us write code faster.
It's a massive, painful irony. As our development environments get smarter and more integrated, those exact conveniences, the things that remove friction from our workflows, are becoming our biggest vulnerabilities. The tool executing a background task automatically to save you a click is exactly the mechanism the hacker needs to run their payload invisibly.
Exactly.
But with threats this advanced, and with the attackers constantly evolving their methods to bypass modern security, how do you protect yourself without becoming entirely paranoid and paralyzed? Because at the end of the day, you still need to apply for jobs. You still need to download repos and take coding tests.
Right. You can't just stop working. The key is implementing a practical defense-in-depth strategy. You have to assume the perimeter will be breached, so you build internal walls.
Okay, so where does that start?
It starts before the interview even happens. You have to verify the human you are talking to. Do a reverse image search of the recruiter's LinkedIn photo. If it only exists on that one specific profile or looks overly smooth by AI, proceed with extreme caution. And absolutely insist on cameras being on during the video interview. If they refuse, citing technical issues multiple times, that is a massive red flag. Walk away.
But let's say they pass that initial vibe check and you get to the coding test phase, you receive a ZIP file of assets or a link to a GitHub repo. What then?
The golden rule of the modern tech job hunt is this. Never do a technical test on your main development machine. Ever.
Never.
Never. You should use an isolated virtual machine like VirtualBox. Or better yet, use a cloud-based ephemeral development environment like Gitpod or GitHub Codespaces, which are completely isolated from your local network and can just be deleted when the test is over. And before you run anything, manually inspect the package.json file. Look for red flags in the script section, like unexpected pre-install, rget, or curl commands that are trying to pull down external files during the setup process.
Okay, I have to push back on the practicality of this for the average job seeker.
I know, it's a lot.
Setting up a pristine virtual machine for every single job interview, manually inspecting every single line of a package.json file before running an NPM install, that sounds exhausting.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if you've been unemployed for 6 months, you are doing 5 interviews a week, you're stressed about rent, and you were just desperate to land a gig, the friction is incredibly high.
The friction is undeniably high, and I completely validate how exhausting that process is.
Right.
But the exhaustion you're describing is exactly the psychological vulnerability the Lazarus Group relies on.
Right.
They prey on interview fatigue. You have to weigh that 30 minutes of tedious setup against the catastrophic cost of the alternative. The cost of not doing it is losing your entire digital livelihood, your crypto savings, and potentially being the vector that destroys the network security of your next employer.
Yeah, that's a steep price.
It is. But you can automate some of this defense to lower the friction. Use tools like socket.dev to automatically analyze NPM packages for malicious behavior, typo squatting, and hidden scripts before you install them.
And what about defending against the session cookie theft? You mentioned earlier that if they get your session cookie, they can bypass standard passwords and even basic authenticator apps.
That is the most critical technical defense you can adopt today, both personally and corporately. Hardware two-factor authentication. We are talking about a physical security key, like a YubiKey or a Titan security key.
So not just a text message code?
Definitely not. If you use hardware-backed authentication, even if a highly sophisticated malware steals your active session cookie, the attacker cannot re-authenticate a new session or perform sensitive actions on their remote machine without physically touching that piece of hardware plugged into your USB port. It is the only truly reliable, foolproof defense against advanced session hijacking.
Wow. So we've gone on an incredible journey today. We started with what looks like a totally standard, maybe even incredibly lucky, LinkedIn message from a recruiter. Then we peeled back the layers to find a multi-stage malware bomb hidden inside the mathematical text of a digital picture of an American flag.
Yeah, it's a lot to take in.
We watched it actively evade security researchers, quietly steal session cookies, and hijack crypto clipboards. And we traced that silent digital theft all the way back to the shadow economy of North Korea, funding a nuclear state by emptying the pockets of freelance developers.
It really redefines what we consider a cybersecurity frontline. It's no longer just bank vaults, heavily guarded data centers, and military mainframes. The frontline is the local environment of your VS code editor.
It's a stark reminder of a famous saying: in the security world, there are only two types of organizations, those that have been hacked and those that just don't know they've been hacked yet.
Absolutely. And if we look toward the horizon, there is a final lingering thought we have to consider regarding this threat vector.
What's that?
Well, as AI gets exponentially better at writing and understanding code, we are rapidly approaching an era where AI won't just be generating the obfuscated malware payload. The AI will be generating the entire fake startup ecosystem. It will generate the recruiter's LinkedIn profile and post history, write the conversational emails perfectly tailored to your resume, and eventually conduct the live video interview in real time using deepfakes complete with a face, a voice, and technical responses that look and sound completely indistinguishable from a human senior engineer.
Wow. So if you can't trust the code you're given, you can't trust the packages you install, and very soon you won't even be able to trust the human face looking back at you on the Zoom call, what will trust even look like in the tech industry 5 years from now? Something to keep in mind the next time you get an offer that seems just a little too good to be true. Keep your virtual machines ready and stay safe out there.